You're back at the Faculty Factory podcast, and I'm looking at Dr. Mona Behuth. Hi, Mona.
Hey, Kim.
Well, everybody, Dr. Mona Behuth is a neurologist. She's the medical director of the Brain Rescue Unit here at Hopkins, and we're so glad to get here. And you know how she got here? Just like you can get here, she was referred by Dr. Rachel Salas, who's been a frequent flyer on the Faculty Factory podcast. Rachel said, Kim, you have to get Mona on the podcast. She's the one you want to talk to about health system science, team science, implementation science, and she is the leader there. So she's here to tell us all about what is health system science, implementation science, and how did you get to be such a respected leader in this place? So welcome, Mona.
Thanks, Kim. Thanks so much for the invitation. And also, of course, to Rachel for really sponsoring me forward. So no, it's really a pleasure to be here. I could probably go on and on about these subjects. So thanks for the invite.
Yeah, I love it. We talk about for years now how science, you know, we've gone from this lone wolf model of have this, you know, the tripartite, you know, triple threat person who's the be all end all by themselves to team science. And can you help us understand, especially maybe newbies out there, where did this come from and how does it look? How does this, you know, how did it look for you specifically?
Yeah, you know, team science is not a new concept. You know, the word team really probably goes back in everybody's histories to, you know, when they first joined that little soccer team when they were in first grade to like being a part of a band. So teamwork is obviously a very core concept in many people's lives. In healthcare, it's critical because it really maintains the focus on the patient and really bringing all the key pieces of what a patient needs at any given moment to them at that time. So to me, interprofessional competencies or team competencies are all about how we know the individual voices on the team, the people who are there, what their expertise are, and how those team members can really come together to bring together a final product that has much more synergy than those individuals alone. So teamwork is really finding the experts, bringing them to the table, which is about patient care in our circles, being sure that the patient gets the best out of each of us so that together they have an even better final product.
So that is beautiful. It sounds wonderful. And I imagine that if I have a patient in front of me who presents with a certain history and unique problem, it's a matter of at a place where your institution or Hopkins, hey, who's an expert here? Or I know so-and-so needs to be on this team. So is it that really that easy of just knowing who's on deck and who is expert in that area? And then how does that parlay into having that team mentality or someone you want on your team? Like there's a difference between that guy's a great soccer player or that woman, you know, I want her in my band. But if they're a jerk and they don't play well in a team, you know, how does that whole the logistics and the reality of that work out?
Yeah, I think in healthcare, we've really fallen into this trap of having a lot of people with a variety of expertise all around us at any given time. Some have easier chance of accessing those experts than others. But the reality is that the conversation becomes very linear. Provider A reaches out to provider B for their expertise, thinks about that feedback from provider B, and then decides if they're going to incorporate that into the care for that patient. Instead, when we talk about interprofessional collaboration or team science, it is having all of those parts of the puzzle together in the same place, speaking in a language that allows the patient to be the center of the conversation in a very dynamic way. So as an example, it's not to say that there isn't a leader of that team. There always has to be the tiebreaker or the leader of sort of who's driving that patient's care forward with the patient. But in this model, you bring the people who are most accustomed to being required in the conversation of that patient care. You align each of those people to have strength in their voice. They know what they bring to that conversation that's unique from the next person. You allow a space that promotes that communication. And then you allow a place where you can actually kind of push back and forth to each other to finally come to an individual decision for that patient and their care partner. So it's really a matter of having the people in the right place, but the art comes by finding a way to have those people communicate together that actually yields an efficient and effective conversation for every patient who comes into your care.
Okay, you said the word art, and this is making great sense. So can you give us an example of the art and the, I'm thinking of this as a dance. So in the Brain Rescue Unit here at Hopkins that you direct, how might that look? Can you describe a scenario where that pushback is not only, you know, allowed. Now I'm imagining that someone can talk the talk, but to walk the talk, how does, you know, someone might be say, yeah, you say we can push back and yeah, this is a safe space, but I know if I criticize or say, yeah, but that I'm going to be shot down. How does that look in a day-to-day practice for you?
Yeah. So our brain rescue unit to me is the premier place to receive stroke care. If you have to have this terrible disease that one day you are fine moving, talking, thinking normally, to the next day having physical disabilities, cognitive problems, this acute disease that comes on in the strike of a minute, you want to come to a place like our comprehensive stroke unit. And we're really looking at it as an ongoing project. We're really always trying to build the stroke unit of the future. How can we be better tomorrow than we were today? A couple of years ago, we realized that we were kind of in a standard rut of healthcare. Patients would come to the hospital, they would lay in a bed, a doctor would see them, a nurse would take care of them 24 hours a day. We would do great things in the ER, but perhaps over the next few days, we kind of were seeing that things were a little more standard. And then we started to say, well, what do these patients really need that we're not providing? We had focus groups, we had internal conversations, our stroke institute started talking together in a very dynamic way. And what we realized was that we were doing a great job of diagnosing and treating the patient early, but we were really not managing their brain recovery very well, where we were sort of putting that off, just like many stroke institutes were doing across the country, sort of putting that off until the patient left the hospital or went to a rehab unit. So we said, well, would it be possible in any way for us to bring these resources to the patient while they're here in this bed from the very first day of their existence? So we made our Venn diagram of who needed to be involved in a patient's care. We realized that the nurse was the center of the model, quite frankly. The neurologists were quite important as specialists of the brain, but we also needed therapists who could be more consistently there with the patients. And that meant physical therapy, occupational therapy, speech therapy. We also realized that we needed engineers in our model. We needed to design things that were a little more innovative. Like, why do we have to do things the same way? Could we use a merge of technology and expertise? And so all those people, and we needed dietitians and we needed pharmacists. I mean, I could go on and on about the team that we really needed to help patients succeed. We brought all those people to the table and we said, how could we possibly do this? And the key to interprofessional collaboration is that you really need to understand everybody's role going forward. So it's easy to say, oh, sure, I know what a physical therapist does. And they could easily say, oh, sure, I know what a neurologist does. But do we really? So we first started by kind of a little get to know you. What does everybody do? How do you come to this patient? And what do you bring to this patient that's unique from the next person? From there, we talked about how would a schedule really look from the patient's point of view. If you're laying in that bed, how does your day look? And how can we get everything to the patient in a way that's very, very healthy for the patient's recovery? And then finally, we had formal communication training with all members of the team to say, the patient is only going to get your best in a safe environment that's very fast moving if we learn to communicate together. And I'll tell you that those first months and years were not always that easy. People would say, why is that attending neurologist talking to me directly? You know, I'm not used to this conversation. It feels uncomfortable. Are they questioning me? But we really had to have a lot of communication discussions about these collaborations are going to all be based in high level communication. And this is how we're going to do it together. And here's how we're going to communicate back to each other when we think things are not going in the right direction. So that people knew that they could have real-time, safe conversations in ways that maybe felt uncomfortable, but had a high purpose for patients.
Oh my gosh, formal communication training. What were those elements or how did that roll out? What does that mean, formal communication? So it's because it sounds to me like the traditional way of communicating charts and on Epic and in hallways and at the bedside. But how did it change? Like, what were the big changed elements?
Yeah, so I come from a sort of mentality of safety training and the Armstrong Institute being here. So that really kind of came, this is the direction we came from because everybody really wants to be passionate about the safety conversation in a high-paced hospital. So we started off with Teaming Up, which is a program that really helped us to learn safety conversation. You know, you can always look at various examples of when things go right or wrong in your life, not just in healthcare. And 90% of the time, it comes back to somebody saw it, somebody felt it, somebody knew it was happening, but they didn't have the words to say it. They didn't have the feeling of power and value to say it. So this half day starting point for our communication discussion was all about giving scenarios, talking together, talking about giving people the tools to safe communication. From there, it really goes into data collection. You have to know how your team works together, and that's where health system science really comes into it. How do you teach people in a way that's valuable? And how do you collect information to know that you actually are communicating well together? So we started a process of bedside rounding together where we would all be in the same room at the same time with the same patient who had their own voice finally in the middle of rounds. And we just took that conversation to the next level and collected data about how were we communicating together, whose voices are we not hearing, and then how do we circle back and reiterate our process.
Wow, Mona, this is amazing. I've not known anything about this. Could you give us a high level feel for what, when you say data, what are the data? What do they look like? Who's collecting them? How are they coming back to the team?
Yeah, so we have data coming in from different directions that we're merging together to build the final story. So some of our data came from on-unit field observation, where we had people stationed around the unit and we were observing to see what happens to the patient over a 12-hour shift, 7 days a week for several weeks. So we started with field data to say what's really happening. And these data collectors were outside of our team who could be biased towards how much we love our stroke unit. And they were just giving really sheer observations that we collected on the unit. From there, we noticed our gaps. We did a gap analysis, and then we have different measures of data coming in now. It can be outcomes data for the patient. How many times did the patient leave in 4 or 5 days as we had expected when they arrived in our unit? How many times did a complication arise? Could it have been a preventable complication? From there, we looked at our team communication dynamic. There have been people coming to do qualitative observation on our unit where we either interview the people who are part of the teams to really understand in a blinded way, how is their experience as a team member and how is communication going? And then we have people on occasion when we can have them rounding with us to collect data. How long did this take? How much voice did the patient actually have? You think you're doing this, but how much was that high fidelity service coming through? So we are really trying to gather comprehensive data in both quantitative and qualitative ways to show the value to the patient, to show the efficiency and the value to the team, and to show our outcomes both as a system and as a patient.
Oh my gosh, Mona Behuth, this is amazing to me. And I'm sure a lot of people are listening to this right now thinking this science, this methodology can be easily duplicated and replicated across the health system. I mean, you've clearly built the model. There's a model there about how to be thoughtful, everything from rolling it back to, as you described, who needs to be at this table, who are all the players? Let's be comprehensive and think about walking through the best way to smooth out bumps and wrinkles. And then do those feedback loops. I like how you built in qualitative and quantitative feedback loops and data. Can you think of an example where you saw through like those one of those gaps or something should have been happening that wasn't that you fixed? Can you think of a tweak or an adjustment that had to be made to give us an example of how the fidelity to the process was monitored?
Yeah, this is a great question. So we really were using our implementation science frameworks, you know, how can we really be sure we are doing what we think we're doing? So one gap that we identified, boy, we thought, oh, we're a superb comprehensive stroke center in a resource-rich place like Johns Hopkins. We should have everything that a stroke patient should ever need. Well, after a focus group with patients, we realized they felt like the center of the universe when they were here. But boy, when they went home, they went to this isolated, dark place where they did not feel at all connected to the team. Oh. So we implemented what we call the J-Step, which is our transitional, early transition clinic, which allows the experts from our stroke unit to really extend their care into the patient's home. So if a patient has a stroke yesterday, they come into the hospital today, they find out that the reason they were having the stroke, put on medications, and clear to be sent home with family support. From there, they're scheduled for this J-step visit where they're seen within 1 week from leaving the hospital. We kick the tires again to make sure all the comorbid conditions are stabilized. We look to be sure they're tolerating those medications and things that we've implemented in the hospital. We check in with the care partner to be sure that this transition home has gone okay. And in some cases, we have a therapist on the visit with us for a high efficiency visit to look at home safety. Mm. This has been a great addition to our comprehensive stroke center. We've really allowed better connection to outpatient therapy. We've really connected with patients in a way that we never had before by actually seeing their home and knowing the challenges that they were having with medications in hand, trying to use the walker in that kitchen that didn't have those corners that were really easy to navigate. So we could really troubleshoot with people right where their issues were. And most importantly, we were doing it much earlier. So we were catching complications so that we could really prevent readmission to the hospital, which was nothing but a confidence loss for a patient to have to come back to the hospital. So a great program. We implemented it. We're loving it. It's going really well. We have a high visit rate. You know, 90% of our patients are successful to come through a telemedicine link to these visits. But yet we're iterating the program on the daily, really, to make sure that we keep meeting the needs of the patient to the next level.
That high follow-up level is a testament to your having built the relationship. And I think that's obviously the number one take-home point is that if you invest in relationships and people, that you're going to get that loyalty and that confidence that, you know, I trust them. These are my trusted providers. And so I want to engage. I want to be there because we see so many times I talk to faculty all the time and a lot of the operations in the hospital are they're just people not showing up to appointments and it really messes up patient flow. And I think that's a wonderful testament to the program you built there at the Brain Rescue Unit.
Well, and I think you hit the nail right on the head. While someone's in this crisis, and they see a team of interprofessional members who are all caring for all these diverse needs that they have in the hospital, from nursing to therapy to the neurologist. There are so many people attending to every, like the minute by minute. So they say, wow, I was safe when I was there. So then to transition that with confidence to the outpatient area with that same team has been really high yield.
Oh, Mona, brilliant, brilliant. And I don't want to spend too much time on this, but I can't help but take everything you're saying to me, and it makes me feel of when COVID hit and how we can take the health system science, implementation science, team science approach, even if you're not a clinician and you're listening to this going, this doesn't really apply to me. I'm not in the clinical space. Gosh, think about being a scientist in the lab, you're a basic scientist, or you're doing administrative work and everybody went home. Think of the patient being a lot of staff or people, faculty members who were discharged home, if you will, using, you know, in the COVID epidemic language, without a plan, no care package, no treatment package, and feel like they themselves are in a dark place where they're not connected to their people anymore. And how we can utilize those same principles of making sure that our colleagues, our staff, our employees are feeling the same sense of belonging to an institution, and that those same principles of collecting data, bringing everyone together, valuing everyone's unique voice and contribution, and following up and having those loops of like, no, you're part of us. We still have you. We got you. You know, that is so important. So I think there's so many lessons can be learned from this concept.
Well, I think that's the key is, you know, I'm lucky. I work with the best team in the whole universe. And I think part of that, being a member of that community, is really, really inspiring and keeps you going with energy, even when the going gets tough. Every one of us here at the Academic Center has a community. And it's great for the health of that team to look at themselves and say, do we each know what the individual is? What's my role? What am I valuable for? Do you see me? Can I do a better job of branding who I am? Does this align with the larger mission? Am I a one-off for the, you know, so it really helps to just hit the pause button for a half a minute and say, who's our team? How are we doing? And what's our vision and mission together? And where are we going?
Yeah, I think it's a great application to that. I like how you said that. Take a pause. Who are the team members? Does everyone on your team, to the example you gave in the very beginning, when we were all part of a little league, whatever, fill in the blank, or any kind of group, you want to feel like you belong in that group, not just fitting in, where you can like jam yourself into a space and fitting in, but rather belong here. Like, we need you. You're not just a dispensable, you'll do for now, but I can replace you with any other thing. Rather, you belong here. And that to me is so critical to the success of any team, fill in the blank.
Yeah. And looking at your data from how is our team functioning, like look at your data to say, what are we producing? How many papers? What did we find out? What did we learn this year? Who presented what? Where are the gaps that will have high yield to increase the efficiency forward?
Wonderful. Just so exciting, isn't it, folks? Well, this is Dr. Mona Behuth. Haven't you learned a lot? I certainly have. If you want to get a hold of Mona, her email address is mbahout1@jhmi.edu. If that's too much, just go to facultyfactory.org. You'll see her whole profile there. Share this episode. I'm sure she'd love to share with you her experiences about building this wonderful brain rescue unit and leading it and all her wisdom around implementation science and health system science. So, Mona, thank you so much for being on the Faculty Factory podcast today.
Thanks for having me, Kim.
Thanks for tuning in to Faculty Factory Podcast. The mission of the Faculty Factory is to build and support a community of leaders in faculty development who share tools, resources, wisdom, and encouragement in service to our faculty members, schools, and institutions. We encourage you to go to facultyfactory.org to find out more, get in touch with me, ask me any questions. Maybe you want to be interviewed on the podcast. Thanks for tuning in to Faculty Factory Podcast. We'll see you next time. The Faculty Factory podcast and website is sponsored by the Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine Office of Faculty. For more information, visit facultyfactory.org.